Australia's COVID infection rate is one of the highest in the world at the moment, and more than 20 people a day are dying from the disease. Immunologist and Nobel laureate Professor Peter Doherty has today urged the next federal health minister to order plenty of antiviral drugs, not only to stop people getting severely ill, but to also cut the risk of patients getting long COVID. Professor Doherty points to the United States, where he says children as young as 12 are being offered the drugs. Associate Professor Paul Griffin is an infectious diseases physician and a clinical microbiologist at UQ. I asked him if he thinks Australians should have better access to COVID antivirals.
Oh, absolutely. We're incredibly fortunate to have access to two highly effective antivirals, but I think we're still struggling to get them to everybody that could benefit from them. And, you know, there's a lot to unpick there. I think we're still not testing quite enough. We do need to find people early in the course of their illness to get the maximum benefit from this medication. But I also think not everyone who would be eligible for it knows that it's available and how to get it as well.
So who is eligible for an antiviral in Australia at the moment once they test positive for COVID?
So at this stage, it's people that are high risk of progressing. And those risk factors, of course, include age and other risk factors, which are actually quite broad. So basically, if anyone has any significant medical problems, then they may well be eligible. And, you know, I think it would be great if people consulted with their GP or specialist in advance to know if they were eligible, so they had a plan to get those medications quickly if they were to test positive.
Are you concerned the word may not be getting out to people well enough that if they are in one of those categories, they should be asking about antivirals?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of people who would be eligible who still don't know that these medications exist or how to get them. And I think there's even still a lot of doctors out there who don't understand who these medications are best suited for and also how to get them in a timely manner. So I think we should definitely look at educating both our prescribers as well as our patients so that we can maximise the utilisation of these therapies and get the greatest impact from having them available.
Is there any sort of computer system in place in Australia that if you've tested positive and reported it to your state's health department, it picks up, for example, that you may be older and eligible for the drugs?
No, unfortunately, there's not really a system that does that as efficiently as you've described. And, you know, I think there'd certainly be scope for that to happen. It really is, after testing positive, up to the patients really to seek out someone, a GP or a specialist, to get these medications. We haven't really closed the loop in terms of automatically notifying those people who might be eligible. And, you know, that's why I think we really do need to get the word out there, both to patients and prescribers.
Professor Griffin, you mentioned in Australia we have access to a couple of good antivirals. What are they called and what do they do?
So we've got two different ones. So we've got molnupiravir or Lagevrio, and the other one is called Paxlovid, which is actually a combination of two medications, imatravir and ritonavir. And both of those medications work by interfering with how the virus reproduces, basically. They do that in slightly different ways. Both are highly effective and slightly different in terms of how they do that, though.
What's the clinical evidence around the world telling us about how well those antivirals are dealing with A, cutting symptoms and perhaps stopping hospitalisations, but also dealing with long COVID and perhaps nipping the prospect of that in the bud?
Yeah, the main thing that's been measured in the clinical trials to support their use was risk of progression, particularly to hospitalisation and some of those more severe endpoints. And both medications did that well. One perhaps did that slightly better than the other in the trials, although there's been no head-to-head trials, so we can't really say one's better than the other. And in terms of their impact on long COVID, we don't have great data to confirm that's necessarily the case, but it would seem very reasonable and very likely that if we're reducing the chance of people progressing to the more severe manifestations of the infection, then it's very likely those medications will also have a significant impact on long COVID, although we do need some better studies perhaps to confirm that is indeed the case.
Have you heard much about how Australia's supply of those two drugs is looking? Have we got enough for it to be expanded to a wider group of people?
Look, we're very fortunate to have quite a lot of both of those medications, and particularly when some of our other therapies that relied on antibodies, for example, have been rendered slightly less effective, some of them at least, with the emergence of the new variants and subvariants. So for these medications, their efficacy has not been reduced by these new variants and subvariants we're seeing, so they still maintain high levels of activity, and we are fortunate to have quite a good supply of those for now.
Associate Professor Paul Griffin, he's an infectious diseases physician and clinical microbiologist at UQ.